So my name's Andrew Smith. I'm chairing this session today, and I have the pleasure of introducing Lynette Nixon. I'm really looking forward to this session. I went to a presentation on design thinking a little while ago, and it was really fascinating. So Lynette has been with PwC since 1997, and she's worked on a variety of projects, both internal and with clients around customer strategy and experience, innovation and change. Lynette uses human-centered design to help her clients solve their business challenges. Really looking forward to hear what Lynette has to say today. So over to Lynette.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew. Good morning, everybody. So we're going to talk a little bit about customers and assumptions and all around design thinking. But before we start, there's an elephant in the room that we need to talk about. So can I get you all to stand up, take a page, don't you hate it when people do that? Take a page off the front of the notepad you've got. Hold it behind your back. Landscape. Now, talking about elephants, I'm going to give you 1 minute to tear the shape of an elephant with the paper that you've got. And you're ready, and go. Shape of an elephant. Behind your back. Behind your back. Oh, my God. Jesus, yeah. Behind your back. These are big floppy ears. I want African elephants. That's okay. Oh, some very good elephants. Okay, that's a camel. Big trunk. But woman, you know something, right? Okay, stop. Let's see your elephants. Somebody's done one in negative. Very strong. Oh, that was a very surprised elephant. That's great. Thank you. Oh, look at that. It's a very good one. Very impressive. Well done. So why do I start with that? Because the elephant in the room for me is that organisations seem to be really okay with only using half of the talent and half of the value and resources that they have at their disposal. What I did for you then was take away your sense of sight. And what that means is all the other parts of your brain become much more active. It seems illogical to me that in organisations we are happy in not using the creativity and empathy of our people. Design thinking is all about tapping into that and using the whole people and also the whole thing about customers. So let me show you what that means in reality. If you think about how we operate now, we have a problem. We go to a solution. And the word that we use is quick win. We love that. We've got to have proof. We've got to prove that we're doing some action. What that means, though, is our thinking is very convergent. Because if we are trying to drive towards implementation, we can only use the options that we already know about. In a design world, we say, no, no, no. We need to really understand. So first of all, let's understand the problem, and then let's think as broadly as we can about what we know about that problem. And that's where we tap into the creativity and empathy of our customers. So before we converge, we get all of this extra insight, as opposed to the traditional business where we're cut in here. So that's really the essence of what we're going to talk about today. And I'm also going to share with you one of the tools that we've developed at PwC called Behavioural Observation, which will talk to you about how we can see the truth of what's going on with your customers. So let's get into it. That's just a bit of a run sheet. So we have to start with the context. Have you heard of VUCA? No? Some consultant made it up somewhere. Volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity. So this is our world, right? And it's not only the world for us personally It's the world for our organisations, and more importantly, it's the world for our customers. So what we have to think about as organisations is how can we help them as they interact with us differently to help manage that VUCA. The thing that I find kind of interesting is, and amongst all of the complexity, one of the things that we often say is we have to give our customers lots of choices. In the thousands of customers that I have observed, the one thing that comes through is don't give me choice. Make it simple for me. So it's kind of an irony, isn't it? We think that we're giving choice and that's great value to customers, but actually they're paralysed by choice. So what's happening in the world? This is the world we know. Rational business processes, hierarchy, fear of failure, decision-making that is made from the inside out. This is the new world. The world our customers are living in, they are networked. They have power over our brands. They can tell each other about an example, a situation that they've been in a nanosecond on social media. I'll give you an example. Airtasker. Anyone familiar with Airtasker? So Airtasker is a site where you can get people to do jobs for you. So sell goods online, do some plumbing, fix a fridge, I don't know. But you write the job down. They bid for the job. I moved house this weekend, so I thought I'd do a bit of a clean out, and I would sell a whole lot of stuff online. So the guy that I got looks very good, absolutely fantastic. Good recommendation, seemed like he was really honest. As soon as I met him, there was something not quite right. Anyway, I'm a novice. First thing that was wrong, he says to me straight away, you have to give me $150 up front. So you know that moment where somebody says you've got to do something so you do it? And then you go, what was I thinking? So first of all, I let this person into my house. He's taken photos of all my furniture. Now I've given him $150. All I've got is his phone number. Okay, that might be a bit naive, Lynette. Anyway, we go through the process. It's not as ideal as it could be. Then we get to Saturday and I'm moving. I need him to go and everyone come and pick up the goods. He says to everyone they've got to be there in the afternoon. I've told them they have to be there in the morning. I'm leaving the house at 11. I need people there by 10. They're not there. So there's a big kerfuffle. So we go through the process. Anyway, we've made all the arrangements. What power do I have? I am going to broadcast about him and his behaviour on Airtasker. And I will write warnings about not to use him. So what he was trying to do was set up a separate business, but my power as a customer is absolutely enormous. And that's a very real example that we need to think about. You know, Telstra have 50 people daily monitoring social media for anything about their brand. Anyone who writes anything, they respond to. So this is the power that we are dealing with our customers. So, the definition of insanity in business, we keep doing things again and again. We keep trying to solve our problems using the same thinking that created them. We keep putting more money and more into here and using the options that we know. That's why design thinking is important. We have to change the way we operate. The result? We are making assumptions. I've done quite a bit of work in the insurance industry, and obviously I can't share much of the detail, but one assumption that screams at me because of this narrow thinking is every customer is price-driven. I have had CEOs tell me every customer is price-driven. That's our starting point, and we'll move from there. I can promise you they are not. If you truly understand what drives your customers, you will see a lot of them are looking for other things from you, and they will pay for it. Let me give you an example. A tradie's calling you up, and he wants to upgrade his public liability from 5 million to 10 million. Mate, how long is it going to take? For a new weekend, listen to good. How long is it going to take? The consultant says, maybe 10 to 15 minutes. He says, okay, just a sec. Puts his hand over the phone. Tony, don't knock down the wall yet. How much can we charge him in that moment? Treble. Premium. Money left on the table. We just counted them. So we have to understand the situations. We have to understand what's going on with them. But we have to get to that truth. And it's listening to them in that moment that helps us understand that. So, same thing, problem. So, let me talk about design thinking. It is the combination of empathy, creativity, and rationality. We cannot get to good business outcomes unless we have creativity, empathy, and rationality. If we just do creativity and empathy, we may put on caftans, eat brown rice, and just sing Kumbaya. The rational business process is what gets us to outcomes. What creativity and empathy does is get us to better business outcomes. So, the other thing that's really important about this is that the customer is at the heart. So you let your customer design your outcomes for you. Now, I know Henry Ford said that if I ask my customers what I want, I would be breeding faster horses. So sometimes they don't know, but can I tell you they show you what's important to them. Let me give you an example, not from insurance. A customer walks into a telco store, has a box this big, goes up to a tech bar and says, I know I've got this is a dumb question. Somebody gave me an iPad 2 weeks ago and I don't know how to turn it on. Person in the tech bar takes this person to the side, shows how to set up emails, download movies, internet the lot. What is the need that that customer has shown that she has? What's the need? How to use her iPad. But it's not an express need. So that's the thing that's really important, is understanding the real need. It's about reassurance. So this person, with one of the outputs that we get from our kind of research that we do are called customer personas. So they are behavioural and not demographic. So this person is called a comfort seeker. I'm a comfort seeker. Not good with technology. Not dumb. Just not good with technology. I can't quite kind of get into it. So I need patience and kindness. But if you show me that, I will be the most loyal customer. And I will pay extra for patience and kindness. Now think about some of your customers. They are overwhelmed by the complexity of their insurance experience. If you show them patience and kindness, they will pay more. Because they feel victim to the complexity of it. The other thing that's interesting about a comfort seeker is I will recruit customers for you. So play forward 2 weeks, our iPad lady, 2 weeks, our iPad lady. She comes back into the store and she's got another woman with her. This is my sister-in-law, Yvonne. She is with your competitor and I want her to have the same experience that I have with you. And so could you please show her how she can set up with you? That's gold, right? Getting a customer to recruit for you. But that's the power of focusing on the customer and what's going on for them. The other amazing insight you get is from your people. We've just recently done a design project with one of the major banks on their corporate responsibility strategy. Their people designed it for them. We had 500 of their people involved in the process. It was amazing. They've already got authorship over what will happen. So that's a really important part of tapping into the creativity and empathy of your people as well. Remember we used to say, dwarf the talent? And yet we're still not using all of the people we can. This is the process that I use for design. I presume you guys get access to the slides, so you know, I thought it'd be useful, you see. The first part is discovery, and I'm going to go through one of the tools we have in discovery. Then synthesis is where you generate the insight. The ideation is about developing ideas. The cool thing about design is that you come up with multiple ways that you can act, not just one way. This line is drawn squiggly like this because it's an ambiguous, unpredictable process. And so if somebody says to me at the beginning, what will the end look like, I can't tell you. Yes, we'll get to an end point, and yes, there'll be insight or a strategy or whatever we're trying to do, but you don't know how you're going to get there. The important part is prototyping, and that's where you're testing and refining your ideas. And that's a critical part, because when you get to implementation, you have no risk in what you're doing. And that's a key part of design, is that you'll get cut-through insights and you can de-risk your implementation. Because all the way through this, you have been used, people have been engaged in the process, your customers and your people, and so they already own what they're doing, the outcome that we're getting to. Does that make sense? Any questions? Happy to take questions or comments. Keep going? Okay. The whole thing is about, this is just my point, it's really grounded in meaningful engagement. And these are some stats that are really important about how important it is to involve your people in your strategies. Gone are the days, if you go back to the world now and the new world, gone are the days where we could go into a dark room, and the same for consultants. We can't go into a dark room and generate a PowerPoint deck this big and just lob it into a business. It won't work. Because everyone has power now and we want to be involved in the design. So, let's go through and talk about observations. So this is the observation of people in real time. And what we're focusing on is not the compliance to a process, but it is the tone and the emotion that they show during the interaction. Importantly, what we're trying to see is the impact your people have on the customer. So you'll see, for example, confusion, because we've gone through a whole big process, a whole big dissertation almost of what all the compliance pieces are, and at the end of it, the customer's going, okay. So it's about understanding that impact. You'll hear questions, you'll hear uncertainty. The thing that's really curious and we often see is overexertion, and that is where the customer has to work too hard to get their needs met. That's a customer interaction I was observing recently, and the consultant said to her, can you just send me your claim your copies of the claim documents, because it's too hard for me to find them in our filing system. So you think about the memory that that customer has of the experience and the interaction. So overexertion, pain points, happy points, it's all about the impact that they have. So the way we do that is we go and we'll jack into calls with insurance agents. We'll follow, just shadow them around for a day as they go on their calls. What's interesting is you would think that because there's somebody else in the room, it would change the interaction. It doesn't. People get used to it. Once you get into a conversation, people just get into it. But the insight that you get from it is absolutely phenomenal. That's where you get the cut-through. And you can challenge the assumptions. So, what you will learn is what's important to your customers, the processes they use in decision making. So we make assumptions about what's important to them. What we have to understand is their truth. And you know, we come up with great ideas, and you see it all the time, an executive will go, this is what I think we should do. And they will drive it through passionately. But if you listen and observe your customers, whether that is a truth or not, you don't know. But you have to get in there and listen. And it's time-consuming, but the truth that you will get will cut through any other data that you've got. So I had an example recently of a company that was really struggling with segmentation. And they were trying to do it by product, you know, did it by size of company, and they just couldn't make it work in a commercial business. So what they've ended up doing it is doing it according to their customer personas. So they are designing products around their behaviour. So like the comfort seeker. So let's understand how we interact with that comfort seeker. How we can do the phone calls, what extra services they need, versus people who are on the end of the phone thinking, 5 seconds before I've got to increase my public liability and I haven't thought about it. Completely different customer behaviour. And we have to design for each of them. The other thing is looking at will get you to the root cause of what's really going on. But I cannot stress for you enough the assumptions. We saw a classic one in a hospital that we were doing. they had some consultants over to do some redesign in the waiting room area and the entrance of the hospital around the signage that we've got they had in the room. So when you walked into the double doors, they had all these amazing signs, very graphic, very bright colours, very kind of hospital light everywhere. So it was a fantastic job. Just one problem. When you observe people as they walk into a hospital, often they are unwell. And when I am unwell, how do I walk? With my head down. So as I'm walking into the hospital, I go through the double doors, the signs are here, and then I look up, and there's nothing. Because they hadn't observed the behaviour of their customers. And so they had to take the signs down, and now they've put them on the floor. Because they've got that, so because they did that observation and were able to show the difference. So the truth that you can get from doing this is just, it's amazing. Obviously, I love it. So the steps you would do. You have to agree the scope you're observing. We're not trying to boil the ocean. We're trying to understand the experience of our customers, how they interact with us, whatever. Then it's really important to communicate with all your site owners because this does feel different. We often have our QA people who are observing for us compliance to process. This is not going to be it. This is going to feel different. So building their confidence in what will happen and that you're going to have people observing is important. Key, training your discovery team. One of the things that we always do when we do projects like this is train some people from within the organisation. Because in my view, it's a skill that everybody should have. If you're observing people that you're coaching, you're going to get incredible insight from who they are and how they operate. And so we always train the discovery team and then we get into the field. Now, I'm going to show you a video. If you've seen it before, can I just ask you to be quiet so that others see it? And then we'll talk a minute about it. So I have to do this, sorry. Oops. That would be good if I had. Why can't it work? Oh, there we go.
The monkey business illusion. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the ball. The correct answer is 16 passes. Did you spot the gorilla?
How many spotted the gorilla? Good.
For people who haven't seen or heard about a video like this before, about half missed the gorilla. If you knew about the gorilla, you probably saw it. But did you notice the curtain changing color or the player on the black team leaving the game?
How many saw that? Oh, very good.
Let's rewind and watch it again. Here comes the gorilla, and there goes a player, and the curtain is changing from red to gold.
So there is a very interesting truth, that we see what we are looking for and we hear what we're listening for. If I go back to the world we're in now, the way that we drive these kind of outcomes is through hypotheses. We come up with, we think we know the answer here. Now we're going to find a whole lot of data that will support that answer. If I go to look at your customers and you say to me they are price-driven, I will see price-driven behaviour. When we do observations, we go to see what we see. So we go with an open mind, and it's sometimes surprising. Sometimes it validates what's already a belief in the organisation, but it is a truth because you are observing them in real time. And that's the inconvenience of this, is that it's real time. It's so much easier to get a big pad of data and to interrogate that and come up with some meaning from it. but this is so critically important in the way that we interpret data. So when we're doing synthesis, if you remember the process that I went through, we let the data tell the story for us. We don't go in with any preconceived ideas. So it's really interesting the way it will emerge. So in any one project, we probably do up to 1,000 observations. You do them across different sites, so you get different geographies, you get regional, you get metro. Whatever the mix is, and all the different functions in the organisation, you bring that together and that's how you get to the truth. Does that make sense? Any questions? No? All right, let's continue. So, some of the outcomes that you get from using...
I mean, your comment that that price is not necessarily that important. If you look empirically at what's going on in the industry, it does seem like people who are growing are very much taking out the price of business strategies.
So, that's interesting. That's interesting language, hey? So, people place a lesser or greater importance on price, but they are not price-driven. You see the difference? So, for some of them, for price, I will want this much from you. For some of them, for price, I'm fine with that. But understanding what that looks like for each of your customers is really important. So that's what the observation comes to understand. I mean, we had one customer said, I really, really like the company. I really like my agent. I like to see him about every 2 weeks just so that I know he's here and he's present and he's kind of in my world. So for him, the price he wants, these are all the things he wants. And that's important to understand what that looks like. And he will pay for that. That's my kind of argument, is that there is money being left because the assumption that we're all price-driven, therefore we must discount and deliver at low cost, may not necessarily be the answer.
I don't think the industry is like that. I think it has been seen.
By behaviour?
I think what's happening in some ways is that we're actually seeing perhaps people responding to it. I think there's change in what people are doing. People are
sure.
Like passive.
Yeah.
Shopping.
There are some who will go around to each insurance company to see what the best deal is that they can get. There's some that do that as well. Any other questions?
I guess maybe just a comment on what you were saying. Maybe just looking at it from a view of macro level, not a micro level, when you look at each individual customer. Seems like that's what the idea behind
this is.
At the overall level, probably price does drive a lot of behaviours, and we expect that it does, but then how do you get better outcomes at an individual customer level?
By understanding what that interaction, So the personas are really, I guess one of the basics is that you have a customer of one, and the opportunity is for you to tailor what you do with each of your customers for that individual, but that's not commercially viable, obviously. The personas are a code for your customers, and it is amazing how homogenous a customer base can be. For some of the largest organisations, we've come up with maybe 5 or 6 personas. Easy to understand, we give them that, like the comfort seeker, easy to understand, easy to remember, and very clearly defined. But the behaviour is very strong and very repetitive.
I'm just struggling in my mind, actually, to give you a hand here. How do we do real-time observation of a person on the street deciding to shop around for their home insurance?
So when you're doing stuff like that, you can see that behaviour when they call you. If they're calling in, you can hear, they will often use language that they don't really understand, but they're picked up. And they'll say things like, when I was speaking to so-and-so, your competitor, this is what they told me.
Right.
So you will hear that in their explanation of how they come to you. And so when they come to a shopfront, that's the conversation you will observe. Oh, I was just down the road, and this is what they said.
Right.
And so that gives you the signal, oh, okay, this is this one. So this is how I need to treat them.
But you'd be missing a lot of information as well.
Like what? Depending on how they interact with you, if they've got a renewal notice and they just pay the renewal, do you not connect with them anyway?
Well, what if they throw in their insurance? Because they know what you'd say from the price.
Yeah.
So they've just gone somewhere else. And so you don't know...
That is true. In real time, you don't see that stuff. You don't see all that homework that they may have done.
You engage a research company and you get them to ask all the potential customers.
Yeah.
The problem with that, I mean, I know personally, like, most of my insurance gets renewed because I have no time to look at it and it just gets renewed automatically.
Yes.
So I've got better things to do. But,
I get the idea.
I just worry because you talked about how important all this observational stuff.
Yeah.
But it strikes me that the most important people, as in the customers who leave it, are the ones that you're just not going to be able to observe.
So I guess what we're doing is observing the customers that are interacting with the organisation when they come to them,
yeah,
or when we're going out in sale.
Yeah.
So if you lose a customer, then often the consultants do follow-up calls with them, and if we can listen to those, then that'll give us the insight about what's going on. So I guess proportionately speaking, I get the point about the losing, but if you understand the ones that you're winning and keeping,
you can then
understand what you do to stop losing. That's I've actually put it into a government.
Yeah,
yeah. Any other questions? Okay. So let me just go to some of the outcomes that you get from using a design approach. So this is involving your people, really observing your customers in real time, using some different tools. The big thing for me is this de-risking of implementation. The millions of dollars that organisations are wasting because they are implementing the wrong project, all of us have been involved in projects like that. We keep on pushing and pushing to try and get an outcome, but we've either got the wrong question or we've got the wrong inputs because we've jumped to the lesser quick wins that all our bosses love. And so de-risking implementation by taking this broad approach, gold. The other thing I love is the authorship of any change that you're going to create. So authorship is a higher order for me than ownership. Ownership is, I thought of a good idea, and I'm going to use my influencing skills to persuade you that it's a good idea. Authorship is, you have been part of the design. Let me give you an example. A sales team, struggling with sales. We did some persona work with them, we got the personas. Then we ran a design forum for them to design what they would do over the next 6 months to implement the personas. They came up with it themselves. We just kind of provided them with the facilitation to help do it. One of the things that they came up with was that they didn't want to be called persona champions. So they decided the name they would call themselves would be persona pimps. So they thought that what they were doing, you know, everyone kind of laughed and went, oh, we can't do that. But it's internal and it's fun and it was there. And so what the pimps do is they will have a week where they'll just focus on one persona. And they created a thing called the persona place, which was a whole wall, and they asked their team to write stories and put them on the wall. I had my skeptical hat on for that. I just didn't think it would work. Anyway, I got a photo recently, and there are hundreds of stories on each of the persona walls where people have recognised the persona, been able to write just on a post-it note the story. The good thing? Their sales went up from an average of 20,000 a week to 57,000 a week because they were adapting to their customers in the moment and the way that they were doing their sales calls. So that is gold. And so that becomes self-perpetuating for them. So that's one of the key things that I think is just absolutely amazing. Authorship is an incredibly important part of the new world we need. Here's some examples. So I've told you about the comfort seeker. Here's another persona. We did an IVF situation. And, you know, there's an interesting assumption about IVF that I don't know if any of you had any experience with it, that it is an incredibly emotional and highly fraught situation. Yes, it is. However, the current IVF players play on that. And so during the process, they say you need to have about 12 different connections with a specialist, totaling, oh, I don't know, about $4,000. So when we did our observation of customers and we did it through different kind of focus groups and conversations, what we discovered was that they needed it to be just like getting a cup of coffee. And so the driver was one of the personas that came out. And that is a person who needs to control the situation. And you can imagine an IVF, that is an uncontrollable one. So what you have to do as it, when you are offering them service is give them everything they can in control. So we put their whole experience, all of their information online. So any time, day or night, they can see where they're up to in their cycle, they can see when they've got the next appointment, they can see what they need to be doing. So the driver, is we're trying to give that control in an uncontrollable situation, but that insight was what helped us do that. So the personas are very real. And notice they are not demographic. Because not every 25-year-old professional woman is the same. We are all different, and we are driven by our values and behaviours, and that is the most powerful thing that business could be using. I've got to finish off. So let me just... One of the things that's really critical in the whole thing about design is the use of stories. And stories, for me, are really powerful. They are facts wrapped in context, delivered with emotion. When I've told you some stories today, your sensory cortexes all grew larger than mine because you were trying to anticipate the end of the story. You can't help it. It happens. That does not happen when we try and tell stories by a bullet point. And so if you think about change in an organisation and customer stories, they're incredibly powerful to be able to share. So I'm just going to flick through here. This I told you about an assumption. This is another one that was kind of interesting. The waiting room, the assumption is that we should get our patients out of the waiting room into the cubicle so that they are closer to care than they were previously. But in fact, when we observed the customers or the patients, they felt uncomfortable there because they were without their family and they were sitting there like a shag on a rock. So some of the hospitals in Victoria now are redesigning their waiting rooms to be lounge rooms and giving their customers or patients and their families a better experience because they've changed that assumption. So that was done through observation as well. The closing thought. The real act of discovery is not in finding new leads, but is in seeing with new eyes. This is so true today when we're all trying to get competitive advantage. Can I tell you another truth? The relationship you have in your organisation with your customers is absolutely unique. So if I tell you about a persona from here and try and transplant it into your business, it doesn't work. Because there is something special about your systems and your people and your culture and the way that you interact with your customers which creates a unique interaction. And you understanding that is what will give you competitive advantage. Thank you.
Yeah, we might, I'm not sure if it's on. Sam, can you just state your name, because it's been recorded, state your name. And
Sam, you talked about different types of customer service and customer experience and how that, knowing which segment that they come from. Have you observed in reality someone actually charging different prices for different segments?
Yes.
So based on their persona?
Yes.
That's a reading
pattern. Yes. Right. So understanding the ones that you can, forgive my words, milk more, getting a different pricing model for those that can't. Absolutely. And worth the investment to marry the price sensitivity of the persona with what you can charge. And also the way that you bundle your products for them as well. Very good. That's the sales premium that our team got. Any other questions?
All right. I think the power here is actually being able to combine some of those analytical skills that we all in this room probably have with some behavioural experiences, and there's real power in that. So if you join me in thanking Lynette.
Thanks.